I'm talking with David Goodman, who literally wrote the history of the Federation, the United Federation of Planets, and the history of Star Trek. And we just learned that Leonard Nimoy, who played Spock, passed away. And David, you wrote a very eloquent testimonial to him because you worked with him on Futurama. But before I get to ask you about the testimonial, can you tell me what your favorite interaction with Mr. Nimoy was?
Well, it was the kind of thing that's embarrassing to talk about, but I'll mention it anyway. We were recording. There were a couple of things that happened when we were recording the Futurama episode. He showed up early and very deadpan. He was supposed to record with William Shatner, and very deadpan said, "Let's see if we can get my work done so I don't have to see Shatner," which surprised us all. And it seemed we weren't sure he was joking. We all laughed kind of nervously. But then when Shatner showed up, they were great together and great friends, so we all assumed he was kidding. But then during a break, I go to the bathroom, and I'm standing at the urinal, and I see out of the corner of my eye that Leonard Nimoy has stepped in next to me at the next urinal, and I'm literally just trying not to laugh. I mean, this is the moment I've waited for my whole life, peeing next to Leonard Nimoy. I think he was peeing as Spock. Very logical.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 430, Remembering Leonard Nimoy. David A. Goodman literally wrote the book about Star Trek history. It's called Star Trek Federation, The First 150 Years, and I talked to David about it back on podcast episode 336. So in the wake of Leonard Nimoy's passing last Friday, I reached out to David to talk about not only the Star Trek phenomenon, but Leonard Nimoy's cultural legacy.
He was great to work with. I mean, I'm making jokes, but he was great. He was very, it was very funny. There was a line in the episode referencing his book of poetry, and he corrected us. He said, "It's books of poetry. I've written more than one book of poetry." So we changed the line, and the line in the episode is now references his books of poetry, which he seemed very proud of. But he was great sense of humor, great, did a lot of ad libs that ended up in the episode. It was a lot of fun.
Well, what's come out in the wake of his death is things that people forget about. Everybody knows Spock, and some people know Mission Impossible, and a few of us theater nerds know he played Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof after Mission Impossible and Star Trek and Sherlock Holmes and Equus. But he was a director. He directed the highest grossing film of 1987.
Yeah, I know, Three Men and a Baby. You know, it was interesting. The Equus thing is a funny thing to mention, too, because I remember every major actor, I think Richard Burton and I think Anthony Hopkins. I mean, there were major, major actors doing Equus on Broadway. And my mother went to see it, I think, with one of those great actors. And I wasn't interested, and then Leonard Nimoy was in Equus, and I was there, you know, right there, ready to go see. And he was great. You know, he was a very talented actor, but then you're right, he was a director. He actually played an alien in a 1950s movie serial that was 15 years before Star Trek. He played a Martian named Narab in a movie serial called Zombies of the Stratosphere. And it's sort of his first time playing an alien. But yeah, no, he had a wide... He did a play that I think he wrote about Vincent Van Gogh and right. Would tour around with, and yeah, directed Three Men and a Baby, obviously directed Star Trek three and four, which were four, I think, probably considered one of the most popular, if not the most popular of the films.
Right.
And,
right.
So yeah. The Star Trek nerddom is strong with you and has been since you were a kid, right?
Yes. Yes, since I was probably around 12, it's about 40 years now, and that was around the time that Star Trek was in reruns, 5 days a week, and that's when the convention started in the mid to late '70s, and I jumped on board, and I don't know what it is about Star Trek that I find myself continually obsessed about, but certainly Nimoy's performance is a big part of it.
Well, and that's the thing that you wrote on Facebook about him, is that it's, you know, so Gene Roddenberry created the character of Spock and said, oh, he's half Vulcan. But then Leonard Nimoy, the actor, comes in and has to do this, has to make it real.
Right, and that's really the amazing thing is that in the hands of a lesser actor, it would not have been memorable. I think that the amazing thing about his performance is that he doesn't just create this one character. For that character work, you have to believe there's a planet of these people, that this is a society that exists. And in those first 7 or 9 episodes of the original series, you only saw Vulcans in 2 other episodes. The rest of the time, it's Nimoy by himself creating this idea that there's this Vulcan society based on logic. And in the hands of a lesser actor, it's laughable.
Right.
In his hands, you believe it. And the other thing that's interesting, the other thing that people forget about Star Trek is that because the fans are so passionate and they dress up and they collect memorabilia and they wear makeup, that there's a much larger group of people who watch Star Trek casually that were just TV watchers and who tuned in. The show doesn't succeed the way it's succeeded over the years as a franchise without that other audience that's much larger than the fans that everybody associates with the show. And the reason it can appeal to people who are not necessarily science fiction fans, that are not necessarily Star Trek, dyed-in-the-wool fans, is because the world feels believable. And the reason, the main reason you believe that this future exists with humans and aliens is Nimoy.
Yeah.
Is what he does as an actor, minute to minute, on that show. And you can see it if you're really a big Star Trek fan. You can watch him find the character in the first season. In the first season, it's not the even performance it becomes, but he finds it, and then the writers are writing to it. I hate to diminish the work of a writer, but in this case, I think it's kind of justified because I've seen other actors play Vulcans, and they're shadows of Nimoy. They're all working off a template that he created from scratch. This did not exist.
Right.
There isn't another example of an alien like that before or since.
Well, and you can see sort of the evolution in a large difference between – he got a dress rehearsal, right? Because they filmed the first pilot,
right,
the Cage, and right. Spock in that pilot is a much more emotional, expressive character.
I don't know. I wonder – I'm forgetting now my Star Trek history, but I don't know that the world – the logic piece of it was even created for that original pilot.
Ah.
And that, then it's the second pilot where I think they fill in the character and say he doesn't – feel. He is about logic, and he's very cold in that second pilot, and then he's sort of going back and forth in those first few episodes, and then finally by the middle of the first season the character is set, it's very clear he's playing it, and it's completely believable. And it's all because of his acting.
Absolutely. Well, and you said too, it wouldn't succeed. The show would not have succeeded, or the movies, without the presence of the fans who don't go to conventions. It's great. Fantastic to see the outpouring on Facebook and everywhere of people saying, I wasn't even a Trekkie, and yet this hits me. His right. death hits me. This character was such a part, is such a part of our culture.
Right.
You know?
It's interesting because I think that one of the ways it started to become part of the culture is when fans moved into the entertainment field, grew up and moved into the entertainment field. Like one of the, I think, seminal moments, interestingly, about Star Trek breaking out into the wider world is that first Saturday Night Live sketch that Belushi played Shatner and Chevy Chase played Spock. It was, that's, I believe, the first sort of Star Trek parody that was on television. And then there's been so many sort of parodies of Star Trek since, mm-hmm. in innumerable shows, and that fans grew up and were then writing and producing television and movies, and they're making Star Trek references. You can see it in the Wonder Years. I think they did one on the Carol Burnett Show. I think, you know, and then of course The Simpsons and Family Guy and Futurama. You know, it's just it, so that those the audiences for that kind of entertainment, if they hadn't been exposed to Star Trek, are now suddenly being exposed to Star Trek.
Yeah,
and I think that definitely plays a role in that sort of expanding of that of the awareness. And then Spock is the most visually memorable thing about Star Trek in terms of a character, and that again is Nimoy. I mean, that's, you know, that he creates that.
Well, the most visually memorable aside from Kirk's expanding waistline.
I can't comment on that.
Hi, this is Andrew Price, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our 82-city UK and Ireland tour of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged continues this week with performances in Bedford, Neath Port Talbot, Newtown, Hedge End, and Stourport, and then continues around the countries to Cardiff, Hemel Hempstead, Lincoln, Peterborough, Harlow, Christchurch, Andover, Colchester, Hartford, Hereford, High Wycombe, Swindon, Cardigan, Brecon, Llanelli, Camberley, Grantham, Harrogate, Solihull, Ludlow, Exeter, Galway, Newton Abbey, Downpatrick, Derry, Londonderry, Westacre, and Norfolk, Wakefield, Barnstaple, Blackwood, Chipping Norton, Pershore, Hounds, Low, Basingstoke, Guildford, Tenterden, Banbury, Derby, Bolton, Wolverhampton, Worcester, Dumfries, Stranraer, Oxford, and Wellingborough. Also, this spring of 2015 in the U.S., we'll be playing East Lansing and Traverse City, Michigan, Manchester, New Hampshire, Princeton, New Jersey, and Frederick, Maryland. Plus, more U.S. dates this summer and fall, which will be added to our website as soon as we nail them down. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. Now, in addition to writing the book Star Trek Federation, the first 150 years, and serving as executive producer on Family Guy and writing on Golden Girls and Star Trek Enterprise, David wrote the famous Futurama episode called Where No Fan Has Gone Before. Here, David explains how that episode came to be.
Well, I showed up at Futurama. I got hired in its fourth season, just on, as a writer on the staff, and the writing staff was filled with Star Trek fans, and they had gotten preliminary acceptance from Shatner and Nimoy to be on an episode of Futurama. And interestingly, the first idea that they were kicking around was not a Star Trek parody. It was a giant William Shatner and giant Leonard Nimoy have a fight over New York like Godzilla. and then I came on staff, and within a couple of weeks, David Cohen, who created the show, could see that despite the fact that there were nothing but Star Trek fans on that staff, I think almost 100% of the staff were Star Trek fans, I was still the biggest.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And so he assigned the script to me, and then we started talking about it, and I gently pushed, but David got right on board. Let's do a real Star Trek parody. Let's try to get not just Shatner and Nimoy, but as many of the original cast as we could. And we got everybody but Scotty. That was my original title of the script. We got everybody but Scotty. But and Divorce Kelly had passed away by that point. But
right.
It was a great experience, and getting to record all those actors in those roles. And everybody was very game to have fun, and the episode came out great.
Well, it's great that they, I mean, Shatner said, get a life in that SNL sketch, and Nimoy wrote, I am not Spock, and yet they came around full circle to embrace this thing.
Well, that's interesting, because Nimoy has two autobiographies.
Right.
The first is called I Am Not Spock, and the second is called I Am Spock. So he clearly, yeah, he clearly learned to embrace it.
I put it out on Twitter that I was trying to remember the last Reduced Shakespeare Company script that I wrote that didn't in some way reference Star Trek, and I was failing.
Right.
I've put it, it's in everything.
Now it is, and we on Family Guy, we're constantly, there's constant Star Trek references, and because it is like, it's a currency that people share. Enough people have seen that original series that you can make reference to it, and people will get it.
And it's international. It's known the world over. So Leonard Nimoy died, and that prompted this conversation. But you have written a book now, or are in the process of writing a book, the autobiography of Malcolm. No, hang on. The autobiography of James T. Kirk, which is coming out later this year, assuming you finish it.
No, it's finished. I'm doing some revisions.
And how did that? That's again as when you wrote Federation. It's a book that I'm kind of amazed that nobody's written yet.
You know, it's interesting. It wasn't my idea, and that's that. I have to give credit to this guy Dave Rossi, who is a executive at Paramount, and he's a huge Star Trek fan. I worked with him when I was at Star Trek Enterprise, and it was his idea.
Right.
And after I wrote Federation, the people at CBS Consumer Products, who put out this stuff, asked me if I wanted to write that because they liked that idea as well. And it was interesting because you're right. Why hasn't anybody done this?
Yeah.
And it was a tough assignment because it becomes a bit of a puzzle because there have been these references to Kirk's background and history, but just little sprinklings of things that for this book to live, you have to pay homage to that, make sure that stuff tracks. But we really don't know much about his life in any great detail. So you have to write a story that hits all those touch points, but also tells a story of a character, and then thinking about who this guy is and how he's been portrayed. And just as there is no Spock without Nimoy, there's no Kirk without Shatner. And Shatner created a character over the course of 40 years, however long he played that role. And you've got to write the character in that voice so that somebody who watches the show is going to say, yes, this sounds like Kirk. This could make sense. But you also then have to fill in a person. And so, as a for instance, in Wrath of Khan, we find out that Kirk has a son that he hasn't seen for the kid's whole life, it sounds like. And in that movie, it's a dramatic moment, and we get to see his son, and we get to see their rapprochement and all this. But think about that. Think about having a kid that you don't see.
Yeah.
And choosing your career over being a dad. What was that? What happened there? And that's a big part of this book. He's a little tortured about this son that he never sees. And it plays a role in his relationships with people. He's a bit of a womanizer. Why? Where does that come from?
Right.
And I imply why I think he's a womanizer by sort of talking about his upbringing a little bit. Why can't he break away from being a captain? Why the cycles of the shows? What's interesting is I was sort of trapped by the cycles of the movies, where a lot of the movies start off with he's an admiral and now I'm going to go back to being a captain. There's at least two movies where that happens. And then the last movie is you retired and you're kind of sorry you retired. That were the specific requirements of telling a movie story. They weren't necessarily thinking, how does this fit in the arc of his life? So I had to sort of talk about that. I wanted some way in which that makes sense for a guy that he keeps trying to move on and he keeps getting pulled back. And is that good?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the book. And then obviously Starfleet Academy, what's Starfleet Academy like? I had a lot of fun kind of using the references from the original series to create something that feels real, I think. His life in Iowa as a farm boy, all those, his girlfriends, all these things that have been sort of talked about in the series and tried to create. I hope I successfully created a narrative where all that stuff works.
Well, that's great. But it sounds, as you're talking about it, it just sounds a huge gold mine. Will this book become canon? Will J.J. Abrams have to refer to this in the next movies?
I doubt it. I think will that
you, will you be I sending it that, to Chris Pine as research?
I think that the thing about Star Trek is it's TV and movies, so they get to decide what canon is.
Right.
The only way this gets considered part of canon is if the fans who are making the new Star Trek read it and like it, unfortunately, most people don't read books, so it's still going to be a small portion of people who watch Star Trek who read this book. But I'm a giant fan, so I wrote it for myself, and I don't think there's anything in there where somebody's going to say, no, that contradicts something. That's for certain. The decisions I make about the things that nobody knows about might cause some controversy, but I think it all works, and I'm very excited about it.
That's cool. I can't wait to read it. And it comes out in September?
September 8th, which, as most Star Trek fans know, is the anniversary of when the show aired for the first time. That's the premiere date in 1966. So it's premiering on the 49th anniversary of Star Trek. So that's fun.
Wow.
And, 49. I know, we're getting old. And it's sad to me that Nimoy has passed before the 50th anniversary. I'm reminded of, I believe it's John Adams and Ben Franklin both dying 50 years after, right?
It's Adams and Jefferson. They both died on the 4th of July, 1826.
Right. Exactly 50 years, right?
Yep, exactly 50 years.
I think it would have been nice for... I hope there's lots of attention paid to next year to Star Trek, just because it's an amazing thing. I mean, it was a TV series, which if you compare it to the other TV series that were being made back then, it is amazing. Its accomplishment is amazing in that context. But then also thinking about the fact that it continues and that it spawned all these things and is impressive. And it's sad that he's dead. It's a sad moment.
And in an alternate universe somewhere, there's a series and fandom and 10 movies called Lost in Space.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your cultural legacy via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can interact with other fans on our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. And of course, we'd always like to see you at one of our performances. Thanks as always. Always to webmaster Matt Rippey, pointy-eared freak Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Catherine Anderson. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Andrew Price, a writer from Star Trek Voyager, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener for 130 to 190ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Now, final question. Will there be an autobiography of Spock?
You know, I don't know. I think you were the first person to mention that. No one's mentioned it. I think they wait and see how this one does. But that's a much harder.
Oh God!
Well, and might be beyond my abilities as a writer. We'll see.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.